We've been talking for years about a boy crisis in America, a crisis in which boys fall farther and farther behind girls in motivation and achievement. In fact, we've been talking about it so long that we entered the backlash phase a couple of years ago. Studies and news stories suggesting that calling it a boy crisis overstates the severity of the situation. Today's guest has a bit of an aversion to the term itself. Dr. Wes Crenshaw can tell you why in a moment. But first, I'll tell you that Wes Crenshaw is a couples and family psychologist practicing in Lawrence, Kansas. He frequently speaks and appears in the media to talk about his work and has co-authored an advice column for 10 years. He's also written several books on psychology, including I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, about ADD, for which he joined us in May of this year. Wes Crenshaw, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
It is nice to be back, Jeff.
So you are careful not to go for the boys in crisis terminology. What do you see and why do you avoid that term?
Well, you know, if everything's a crisis, then nothing is a crisis. And I think we often like to pitch things in a scary way that sell more books or get people to buzz a little bit about them. I think it's a pretty serious issue, but I doubt that it's an epidemic that's going to wipe out the country. So I try to be kind of calm about those things when we talk about them.
All right, so when we talk about the issues with American boys, what are some of the major characteristics you see with the current flock, and generally which age group are we talking about?
Well, it's an interesting situation because I think your introduction was great because this is not a new phenomenon. And just to sort of set us off for an interesting context, I'm going to read you a very brief passage from a book, and the person referenced is Charles Schleider. You don't have to know who Charles Schleider was. And then I'm going to ask you when you think it was written. In Charles Schleider, there grew a feeling, which he never lost, that some American mothers had given their sons everything in the world except a belief in themselves, their culture, and their manhood. That they had, some of them, sent their sons out into a world with tigers, without telling them that there were tigers, and with no moral armament. When would you like to guess that was written?
1915?
Oh, you're getting there. That was actually written in 1959, and it is a book about the Korean War. And
really?
He is reflecting, yes, he's reflecting. It's called This Kind of War. It's an excellent book. And he's reflecting on this idea that a lot of young men were not, that went to war in Korea, were not really of that greatest generation, a term that came later, but that they had been sort of coddled by their families. And I think this is something to look back on and realize this is nothing new. We are still struggling. I think that passage could have been written yesterday if there's a boy crisis, because I think a lot of it is we have not taught boys the same lessons we've taught girls over the last 40 years.
So what are some of the things that we should have been teaching boys? Who are the tigers, or what are the tigers?
Yeah, there seems to be a tiger at every turn. In that story, the tigers were North Koreans, but I think that the tigers are everywhere, and we have to be watching out. And so what happens with girls, you have to sort of contrast what we teach girls with what we teach boys. Girls at this point in our history, and I work with a lot of them, I see them every day, are the daughters and granddaughters of feminism. Whether they identify with that or not, and today more and more girls are re-identifying with feminism, but whether they even know that term or think about it, they are the products of generations of women who have basically told girls, you either have to get up and do what needs to be done and, you know, work hard or get a career and manage the family and earn your way in the world, or you're going to get stuck dependent on some guy. And that's really the implicit message that young women have gotten over the years. Guys have gotten a very different message. Would you care to take a guess what it comes out as?
No, nothing comes to mind.
The message guys get is one more of entitlement. Young men have been brought to believe that they have kind of a special cultural place in society and that things will kind of just come to them. Now, how do I get this? Well, in dialogue with kids every day, boys don't say, well, where's mine? I know I'm supposed to get something. They don't come right out and say that, but they do not have this persistent, driving nature that young women have. And you need not look any further than the graduation statistics, which now are a 60-40 split across the country, with 60% being young women graduating college and only 40% young men, and that tends to go up about 1 point every year for the last several years. To kind of see that.
Wow. I mean, was it at one, I mean, obviously at one time it was much more in male favor because women didn't go to college generally, I mean, decades ago. But so when was that crossing made, do we know?
You know, I don't know what year it began to be majority young women, but I think you would look back and find it hasn't been very long ago. Just I wrote that in a column back in March, and I got a letter from somebody who said, I didn't believe you, so I looked it up. And it's only 47, 63 or something like that. Well, they were 3 years behind. I looked it up. And so the difference was, it's now 60-40. It was 43-57 3 years ago. So it's clearly a trend line moving toward more and more girls graduating. And for girls, it's tricky because if you are a young white female in school right now, you are an absolute majority in almost every school, with a few exceptions in the country.
We will talk about the exceptions. We'll talk about the rules as well, why it is that we're talking about 60% of the college graduates are women and 40% men. 3 out of every 5 are female, just 2 out of 5 men. And talk about other things that people do tend to lump in the general category of boy crisis. Our guest is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. And take your phone calls and emails for Dr. Wes in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. For lack of any better term, we'll talk about today's topic as the boy crisis, because that's the handle often given to it in America. Differences in achievement levels, particularly in academics, between boys and girls, heading all the way up into the adult years, when now we have 60% of the college degrees going to women and 40% to men. That's a big difference. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a couples and family psychologist from Lawrence, Kansas, has joined us several times on the program. We're glad to have him back to talk about what he sees as the contributing factors, why boys are lagging and why women seem to be charging ahead. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's see if we can make some finer distinctions here, Wes. Are boys doing worse academically, or are girls just doing better?
Yes. Well, we've had this debate several times in different shows. One of the things that girls have said when we've had young adults on the show is, hey, don't hold anything against us just because we're doing well. Too bad for you. And boys tend to react very harshly to that by saying, hey, you know, we should all be in this together. And then girls say, where were you when we were the ones on the downside? So there is a little bit of a battle of the sexes that's reversing now, I think, when you really start to open this dialogue up. I think that it is a combination of two things. Girls are really hitting their stride. It's just a few years ago in our newspaper column, we talked about girls being kind of retiring in class and not being willing to, you know, raise their hand as much. I don't know if that still goes on, but I know by college, girls are the ones who hang in there better. They will accrue more debt. They will stand up and fight through one more semester when things get hard. They will change majors when they are not in a major that is working for them. And the research tells us that guys will stop incurring debt and drop out sooner, which is either a good strategy or a bad one, depending on whether you ultimately graduate. And, of course, we see in that statistic, girls do ultimately graduate at a higher rate. And I think boys are more distracted these days, and they are less able to persist in an academic environment that is more rigorous nowadays than it ever has been before. So it's a little bit of both.
Let's see if we can burrow a little further. Maybe graduation is not the number we need, but matriculation. I mean, if we're talking about a 60-40 split, women and men on emerging with diplomas, are the numbers that distinct coming into college? Is it not that men are not graduating, but that they're not going in the first place, or are they going and not graduating?
I think they're going and dropping out at a higher rate. I don't know the exact number for day one of freshman year, but you have to remember just overall population statistics. The United States sends more kids per capita to college than any other industrialized nation, and we drop out more kids per capita than any other industrialized nation. 46% of all college freshmen this fall will not graduate in 7 years. And this is part of why the student loan, you know, this is a whole other show, but it's part of why the student loan debt load is so dangerous right now. Isn't because education isn't worth the risk. It is. It's a failed education brings with it no benefit. And so basically you've bought a wrecked car and you still have to pay for it. So in that, using that analogy, of the 46% that are failing, a larger percentage of those are guys. Guys go into college, but they don't come out in a higher rate.
All right. So, this goes back, though. I mean, we're still talking about this starting as a boys' crisis. And here again, this is not a term we want to use, but it's the handle that has been given to this generally. Where does the separation take place? I know I saw one study that indicated that by fourth grade, things are actually fairly even, but they begin to separate after that?
That's probably about right. Now, you remember my age range is middle school and up, but I see it by middle school beginning to be a problem, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if the study you just cited is correct. And it the academic environment, there are two or three schools of thought on this, and I think that we don't know all the answers. One school of thought is what's called the feminizing school of thought, and this idea that education is predominantly a feminine practice, and so boys aren't, let's say, ministered to, or they're not taught in a way that fits well for boys. I don't know that there's any actual evidence of that, but it's one of the schools of thought. I'll tell you one I believe is true, is I think boys at that age do need to be in fairly active environments. And one of the truly most bizarre things that we've done in the last 10 years in education in this country that violates everything we know about the research on learning is to reduce the amount of recess that we have. And high school students need recess, frankly. Taking it away from elementary school students is really a puzzling thing to do. And there's plenty of evidence that, particularly for boys who are very active in their day, taking away recess is a good way to reduce their learning. So that probably hasn't helped very much, but we can't probably pin everything on that either.
Really? But so it's interesting then, because then the trend would be to take away recess so they could spend more class time, in theory, learn more, but it has the opposite effect.
It's nuts. It is one of two or three things that schools do. And education is supposed to be a research-based discipline. When you go to education school, you learn how to do research and learn from the literature. And this is one of two or three things that are just at the point of delusional that schools do. Another one is start their high school days at, 6 in the morning. That violates everything we know about teen brains. So some things, particularly for boys, are not set up probably as well in learning environments as they could be in the pre-middle school years.
Wes Crenshaw, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Here is Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you. I would like to comment on the fact that 40% of children now are born to unwed mothers. Of the men who are divorced who have children, only one-third pay all of the child support that is due. And so what I think we're seeing is the slacker sons of slacker fathers, and that, if they took the electronic toys away from these sons, and if they had good examples of hard-working fathers in the home with them to set a good example, that we wouldn't be seeing these outcomes. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Ann. Appreciate it. Wes got a lot to work with there.
Sure. Here's the downfall of that argument, and it's pretty simple. So if you argue that this is sort of a chronic generational problem, that you've had people who weren't trying very hard for two or three generations and they're generating more and more kids who aren't trying very hard, this ignores the fact that just looking at my caseload, I work in two very affluent communities. And the children of the well-to-do and the hardworking middle-class folk all are experiencing the problem we're talking about today. It is not a socioeconomic, there's no socioeconomic relationship to this idea that boys are having a hard time. I have kids, but I could probably give hundreds of examples, but I have kids who've gotten into Ivy League schools, boys who've gotten into Ivy League schools, and they just bomb out. They just come back broken. And so that it's not really, sure there are issues of different socioeconomic groups having different challenges, but the idea that there are several generations of slackers and they are just generating more just does not fit anything we're seeing in this experience.
We're talking about boys and the issues they have in American society today versus performance against girls in academic and other settings. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest in the exchange, a couples and family psychologist practicing in Lawrence, Kansas. He goes on the air in Kansas City and other places as Dr. Wes. He's joined us here before. You can join us now on the exchange as we talk about this issue. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I've been looking around the web to see if we can find some numbers here, and it looks like as of the middle of last decade, by that point, 57% of entering college students were women. As opposed to in 1972 when 43% were. So just the numbers of women going to college is that much greater.
That's a very interesting statistic, and it does not surprise me. Girls will attempt college with just a different attitude. And it's interesting because, as we were talking about socioeconomic disparity, I absolutely know single moms who have fought their way through college very effectively. Overcoming adversity seems to be something that the daughters of feminism are kind of better suited to do. And one of the things I have proposed, and, you know, we can kind of sprinkle this through the discussion, but one does want to think, what can we do to make changes? And one of the things we, I think, need to do with boys is from very early on start talking to them about consequence, and we have to start talking to them about being part of an economy. One of the biggest mistakes I see families make, and they make it a lot in these parts, is to give far too much stuff to their kids. And this sort of reinforces the sense of entitlement that we see a lot in this generation, or talk about a lot in this generation. If one is given a car, one does not think about its value. And I know that seems to be really obvious. If one is given a college education, one does not think about its value if they are not signing the check. And yet this is the common behavior amongst not only wealthier folks, but amongst middle-class folks. They will go in and take out all the student loans and turn the money over to the kid, and the kid has no copay. They have no personal cost in that. And this is something that does not convey a very good message to young men, particularly about how to strive. Now, other people can say, well, isn't that true of young women? It is, but young women have culturally a proclivity to strive that we just are not teaching as effectively to boys. We need to teach boys feminism.
Really? Well, is it as simple, though, as things like girls in our culture? I mean, let's face it, we talk very much still about the fact that even women who work full-time end up doing the majority of work around the home.
Yes.
And it would seem to me that message would probably filter down to the kids as well. Like, well, mom does all the work, therefore the girls do the work and the boys get to watch sports. And yeah. I would think that that would probably be part of the issue, maybe not a huge one, but part of it.
I think it is. On one hand, we do see the research that men in two-parent families who both work have done some catching up in terms of providing much more equally work around the house, household chores. That has improved, I believe, in the last 20 years. However, women still are, because of this sense of striving that I'm talking about, this sense of really being gung-ho in whatever job or career they're doing, many women are facing this very difficult struggle to be both a big breadwinner and be the traditional mother. And, you know, it's one of the reasons we see the rate of heart disease going up for women in the last 20, 25 years, because they are in much more stressed environments, just as men have been over the course of time. So I think that I see this all the time. I have clients complain to me of how difficult it is to be so many things to so many people in that situation. It doesn't come without a cost, let's put it that way.
It seems to me, Dr. West, that it can't be pinned certainly to any one thing, but I, you know, you can certainly see a variety of factors, and we'll talk about pornography and video games and some of the other things that you put on your blame list, but I also think about the fact that in the time that we've gotten this proliferation of video games, handheld and otherwise, we've also gotten into a society where there are not many manufacturing jobs anymore. This is particularly true in our region, which is heavily, traditionally, timber-dependent and not nearly as much so anymore. So the chance right. for a young man to get out of high school and go straight across the street to the timber plant and get a job pulling veneer into plywood for the next 40 years are much more limited than they used to be.
Yes, in my book, I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, I talk about this for people with ADD, that it used to be very much easier to do the kinds of jobs you're talking about, and they didn't require as much interaction with technology and math and science. Well, you know, if you're working in a modern auto plant, you're interacting a lot with technology, robots, computers. If you're repairing cars, you are interacting with a very complex computer diagnostic system. There's instruction manuals to read and keep up on. This is a much more brain-based society than it ever was. And just now, and thank goodness for it, and I assume this is true out your way too, just now we are beginning to return to a time when there are alternatives in high school for learning trades. We went through this period of time where the only thing that was important, apparently, was learning, you know, calculus. And to this day, very few people have been able to explain why that's important for the broadest range of students. But by golly, we decided that was important. And programs in auto mechanics and heating, cooling, and ventilation and air conditioning and hairstyling and entry-level electronics and entry-level nursing, and I could go on and on, those all just sort of were like pushed to the wayside. We're now realizing, and there's a push on nationally to really try and do help kids with careers they may be better suited for that are hands-on kinds of careers that they're going to fit better into, so we don't have as high a dropout rate. And I don't want to stereotype boys as going into those careers, but I think for boys who are interested in that, they don't have to go to college. We don't have to tell them a four-year college is the only way to be if that's not, you know, who they are, and we're hopefully moving more in that direction now.
Well, then there's something about academics that we haven't discussed here, which is evidently some sense of this is something that girls do. Because if we're getting to a place where 57% of the people entering college are women and 60% of the graduates, for that matter, and I'm not, you know, obviously we're talking about potentially different years. It could be the same number in and out.
Right.
Then there's an issue here with some message boys are getting somewhere about academics generally.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a very good one. And I got to admit, that's one I have yet to fully plumb, because what boys say about academics and what they do about academics, both clinically and statistically across the population, seem to be different. Boys will say, yeah, I want to go to college. I want to be a doctor. You know, they will espouse a cultural message about the value of education. But in the moment-to-moment, day-to-day, get-up-and-have-to-get-it-done that all of us have had to put up with to finish, that's where they have a harder time. And it is because I believe, from talking to guys day in and day out, I believe that there are, you know, several real big distractors that get in the way of them really fully participating in some of these activities.
Well, I remember it rankled me when I was still in high school to be told that that girls tend to mature faster than boys. And I'd say, no, they conform faster than boys. But, you know, let's face it, I'm in my 50s now, and I appreciate what was said back then, and I believe it to be true.
Yeah.
Is it an even slower process of maturation for boys in today's world?
I think it is. I do love the point you make about conforming, because the reality is that they're for kids to grow up, there must be a dialectical tension between conforming and individuating from conformity, if you understand what I mean. You have to both stretch yourself and understand the limits, and that's exactly the nature of adolescence. But yeah, I think that if anything, it's becoming more elastic. All teenagers and young adults, now let me say that differently, all young adults are looking more like teenagers than they have in past generations. They are not maturing as quickly. They all know that. And I think amongst boys, especially if you ask girls, it's even a little more noticeable.
Much more to talk about with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. We're talking about boys in America and why they seem to be lagging further and further behind girls in academic and other achievements. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Wes and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Let's call today's topic the gender gap. It keeps us from talking about it as the boy crisis, but the fact is that boys do seem to be lagging further behind girls in academic and other achievement across America. Dr. Wes Crenshaw counsels families and couples and does have clients among younger people and practices in Lawrence, Kansas. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about some analysis of what the issues are here, both macro and micro. 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Zelda in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Jeff. I just want to respond to something that I heard your guest say a little bit earlier. I want to say that the thing of it is that college, in my experience, mm-hmm. is not trade school. College is a place where people learn to interact with the world outside of their families. And so I think that's important. And the other thing that I thought of is that boys that don't grow up with a very strong relationship to their own fathers who set a good example are the ones who fail to become men in the rest of their lives. That's about all I have to say, but I think that's really important that if men are going to have children, they better step up. They got to be the example.
All right. Thanks for that, Zelda. Good to hear from you. What are your thoughts about that, Dr. Wes?
Well, I think those are lovely aspirations, and as a father myself, I agree. I think that all the research tells us that having a good relationship with one's father for both boys and girls is what's referred to in the research as protective. It offers some protection against certain problems, things like dating violence are decreased if a person has a good relationship with a male parent. So there's no question that's pretty helpful. I think today for boys, a whole lot of boys with really good fathers are still struggling because in the adolescent years, sometimes parents begin to think, well, you know, I'm kind of done. My kids are who they're going to be already, and I can sort of pull back and let them do activities and let them do things, and they'll kind of get through it on their own. And we particularly reinforce this notion now with this idea of the helicopter parent. You'd think the helicopter parent needs to be shot down with a Stinger missile the way that we hear so much about it now. And in my experience, there's every bit as much of the disengaged parent that there are parents who are good people who did great through maybe middle school, and now they see their teenagers, you know, sort of as free spirits. And this is a time when boys need to be not just have a respected father, but get some coaching on how to interact with others in an ethical way, to show empathy for others, and to really be held accountable to that. And I think a dad can do a great job of that. A mom absolutely can too, as long as they have what's referred to as an authoritative relationship, not authoritarian, authoritative. And this means that the parent is seen by the child as someone they want to emulate, as a person that they, you know, they aren't going to come right out and say that, they're teenagers, but they have a sense of wanting to be like the parent. And if they do that, they will turn out better. They will turn out as having more aspirations and a better way to interact with others.
Does that authoritative aspect include, though, making sure that you're quite clear that I am your parent and not your buddy?
You bet. And that's a part of authoritative parenting. That the other form is the laissez-faire parent, which is the one I'm saying is kind of a worrisome one. And then the helicopter parent's kind of the in-your-business-all-the-time person, which is different. The authoritative parent is someone the kid can rely on for both direction and for guidance and influence. And that parent knows the difference between things you can change and things you can't change. And about your kid, and that's where it gets tricky, and that's what we spend a lot of time in working with parents on, is figuring out what are the real things to focus on with a kid and what are things they have to find on their own.
I wonder if the laissez-faire parents are laid back by disposition, or if it's really more about they are very, very busy because both parents are working. I've often wondered this about when we talk about performance in schools, when you think about parents not having a lot of time to spend with kids on homework, for example, because they're at work.
That's such a good question, Jeff. I think that there are, that the two feed one another. I just had a case the other day of a 30-something person who very clearly has been struggling with ADD all of her life, and we went back through the list of classes and all of the failings that she'd had. And I said, what did your mom do for a living? Just the standard questions. She said, well, she was a special ed teacher. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, how did this person miss this? Well, it's exactly what you're talking about. That's a pretty busy job. And if you're busy with all of the other people's special need kids, maybe you miss yours. And so I think there are a lot of people who are really, in our very manic world now, kind of leaving kids at home unattended. I mean, I see it every day.
Well, I was going to ask you then, as we switch from the macro to the micro view, because you do have clients, we're not going to talk about it by name, obviously, but people do bring boys to you. Is it usually an ADD kind of thing that they're complaining about, or something else? Or, I mean, what's the most common complaint?
Well, and I have about an 80-20 caseload girls to guys, about 80% girls and 25% guys, something in that range. And so because I'm known for ADD, sure, that's a big part of it. But the biggest thing, ADD or not, is for guys that people bring them in, is academic failure. And this ranges from the Ivy League kids I was talking about to kids in trade school to kids who can't even get started. And sometimes that's ADD, and a lot of times it is the rest of the world's distractions. And I think that, you know, begs the point of kind of what are these distractors. And there are about three or four of them that I think are making it really hard for late teens and early adolescents, and they're fairly new. They don't harken quite back to 1959. And the first one is video games. The difference, and I don't know how old you are, Jeff, but I'm guessing we're not far off. And back in our day, in order to get a video game to work, you had to put quarters in it. And So when you ran out of quarters, you were done. Well, that has quickly changed over the course of time to where we now have unlimited access to video games. And so kids buy the system or get the parent to buy it, and there are two or three different systems kids have, and then they can just play endlessly. And we had a kind of funny call recently in St. Louis on the air, and a guy called up and was very upset that I even hinted, that video games were any kind of a problem at all. And I said, well, how much do you play? And he said, oh, about an hour a day. And I said, then you probably don't have much to worry about. And then in the end, he admitted he just spent July playing 300 hours of one of the games. And this is an addiction. And there are a lot of young people who are playing that much Call of Duty and other games. And when you're doing that, not only is it a huge amount of time investment, but that's not even the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that it's non-reciprocal, even though you have games that you play with the little headsets and everything. And I think that's a pretty neat activity. I'm not against that. that the game is you take from the game, but you don't have to really give very much. And this is one thing I think boys are getting more and more hardwired in, this idea that life isn't very reciprocal for them. They just want to get a lot. And it's interesting, we had a later call on that show where the guy said, you are basically describing me to a T. And I have a lot of young men, when I give them that analysis, that say, yes, this is me. So I know this is a real thing, not just something I'm concocting.
Let's take a call. We have Sandy in Mount Shasta on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. We're talking about the achievement gap between boys and girls.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Crenshaw. I think this is a really important topic. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about the role that attachment plays in creating secure kids who are then able to make better decisions and who feel close enough connection to their parents that parents have a much better chance of influencing them. Several years ago, a book came out called Hold On to Your Kids by Dr. Gordon Newman, Canadian therapist and psychologist and developmental specialist. And he makes the case that in our culture, we have been so obsessed with, oh, my God, if I don't get my kids to be as independent as possible, as fast as possible,
right,
they're not going to separate. And yet the exact opposite seems to be true.
All right, let's pick it up from
here. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Sandy.
That's one of those questions that's so thoughtful. That is what I call a good public radio question, and it's worth about a two-hour show. The short version is we all understand that attachment as a concept is critically important. One of the problems with going beyond sort of good, solid attachment in infants and young kids is that it's been extrapolated into a, for some people, a sort of, I don't know, religious belief. That's exaggerating a little, or like a doctrine. And there's a thing called attachment parenting, which the people who don't like helicopter parents find just terrible, because it is this idea that you really stay up in the life of your children very closely, even physically in some cases. My statement to that is that it kind of depends on the kind of kids you have and what your goals are. If your kids are in need, if they lean a little to the ADD side, or they need an awful lot of oversight, I think that level of attachment is critical. For anxious kids, this can be extremely detrimental. I have kids I see in their adolescence who are scared to tell their parent anything in their life, not because they think they'll get punished, but because the parent will become so over-involved and themselves so anxious that they just don't want to stir the pot. So the child has this whole secret life, and it can range from, you know, being sexually active to staying up secretly at night and doing their homework. But they don't want the parent to know anything for fear it will just raise everybody's anxiety. So it's just like anything else. Attachment parenting kinds of models can be really useful in certain situations and not useful in others.
Let's go back to some of the things that you think are causes for boys lagging in achievement. Video gaming, we just talked about, but you also have pornography, heavy pot use, and girls' self-proclaimed sexual liberation on the list. Pornography? Because it's available so much more easily now?
It's just like video games. Pornography has gone from being that thing you had to sneak into an adult theater to watch, or you had to go down to that trench coat looking bookstore and buy this dirty magazine, to something that it takes about 20 seconds, and that's probably a stretch, it may be shorter than that, for a teenager to access the most extreme forms of pornography imaginable. If people are interested in that, I have a white paper on my website on the media page that we did a show last year about this locally. And I because I can't say some of the things on the air that are in the paper, I wrote this paper so people could read it. And I kind of go into detail about the economics and the accessibility of this. And it's actually, we were pretty much ahead of the game on this. This is now becoming much more apparent in the mainstream media. And to be clear, girls play video games. They don't play them like boys do. Girls consume pornography. They absolutely do. They don't consume it quite like boys do. And what happens with boys in pornography is that, and there's actually a movie about this called Ron John, and or Don John.
Don John,
me.
I've seen it. It's a good movie.
I'm waiting for it to come on HBO because I spend all that money on satellite TV. I like to get my money's worth, but I want to see it. People have recommended it to me multiple times. And the problem is that girls even have a name for this now, and they refer to them as porn-educated boys, meaning what they see in pornography they then come to expect in themselves, in their performance, and in the performance of their partners. And the problem is, and I highly recommend another movie called Sexy Baby, which is not as salacious as it sounds. It is a movie that really gives an analysis of this issue. And in that movie, they have an adult actress who says something so smart about this issue. She says, people need to understand that what we do in these films for the camera, we do because it looks good for the camera. It's not something you would do at home. And if you just think about this, boys see this, they're very interested in it, they have been for 100 years, now they have it coming down the line at full throttle 24/7, and they see multiple things that are kind of out of anybody's expectation for sexuality, and this becomes what they are interested in with partners. And that's changed the whole sexual dynamic.
All right, there's so much change in the world that it sounds like boys are having trouble keeping up, and there are other causes, obviously, more things to talk about. As always with you, Dr. West, we'll have you back sometime down the road.
We will look forward to that from beautiful Kansas City.
All right, take care, Wes Crenshaw.